Perfect.
Nailed it. That's what we do. I don't even know why it's even a thing. We shouldn't even do it anymore. I should just say four.
Yeah.
We just snap.
There was a bit in LTA when we used to play live where, like, when we didn't have a click and there was a bit and we always just stop and Mike used to go, dah, and then we used to come back in. And I remember just being like, oh my God, that is the most terrifying thing. At least turn around and give me a 1, 2, 3.
Gah. Right. Give me just like something. It's funny. I'm always scanning when I'm playing with my current project, Man on the Moon. I'm always scanning like through my cymbals to see if I can see the back of the bass player's heel. Cause he has a lot of parts that are like, and then 9 minutes later, and it's like, come on in. And I'm like, well, I don't know what the tempo is, dude. Like, you're playing one note per 8 bars. I'm not really feeling the pulse here. And I'm like, could you just shuck and jive some part of your body so I know where the pulse is and I can come in?
Because
then I'll come in and it'll be like, you're rushing a little. I'm like, well, I'm really not because I'm just swimming in the ocean. So I have no reference for what's going on. Just tap the back of your foot so I can see what you think the time is.
Yeah. Mate, no one knows the pressure of a drummer, mate. That's the problem. It's like.
And they don't know how much we help. Like, I'm always giving you a little chick. With the left foot. I'm always giving you a reference.
Yeah, always, man. Yeah, I remember that bit and I always used to be like, at least turn around so I can see you. At least do that. Do you know what I mean? Just give me
look,
a...
Look.
Flip it out.
We're not in James Brown's band. We don't have to pretend like we all have flawless timing. Like, exactly. It's okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, how are you, bud?
Yeah, mate, I'm good, man. I'm good. Your room looks amazing. For those who are listening, Mike's got a new room and he sat there and it looks beautiful. It looks wicked, mate.
And for all of those of you that are listening, thinking, wait, could I be watching this? No. You're all listening.
Yeah, they went for a period of time where we tried to record the video and then it got to the end of the podcast and we completely forgot to record the video.
We just were like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Did you press record? I didn't press record. Did you press record? I didn't press record.
No, but yeah, the room looks amazing. Man.
Yeah, no, it's good. Thanks, buddy. It's nice to have this. I mean, this is a place that... This has been Amber's office for over a decade, and she's never once stepped foot in here. But when we sold our first business, the Drum Lab, and then we did our website out of our house for a long time, I'd say maybe a year and a half, we were doing the website out of our house where we just had a spare bedroom, and that was our website, and that was where we filmed everything. And then when we got this place 10 years ago, I wanted us to work together, but I wanted us to be separate so that we weren't actually in the same room all day long.
Yeah.
And so we built her this office and she's never been in here ever once because it did its job too good. It makes her feel completely separate from whatever I'm doing or what the campers are doing. Mm. So it just ended up becoming storage. But my biggest problem with it was that the door, this room is attached to our lobby, and the door on this room is glass. So it's storage, but you can see right into it. And I am a neat freak, and it just always drove me nuts. So I was like, okay, someday we're going to figure out a use for this room rather than just storage. And then it just, you know, with the drum docs and with student reviews and the podcast, it was like, oh, that's what it could be for. So
perfect.
I still have some work to do. Unfortunately, the desk that I'm using right now, if anybody's like, wow, it's not a very good room for a podcast. Doesn't sound that great. The desk that I'm using is metal. So
right.
I'm speaking into a giant plate reverb.
It sounds good.
Thanks, buddy.
I mean,
we're almost there. We just need a little more diffusion and we'll be all right.
Yeah, I'm used to a shipping container. So I know what that's. I'm used to that.
You know what? There is something that would make both of us sound a lot better.
I know exactly what
I'm thinking.
Exactly where
you're
going.
I'm just saying, if the Patreons, who have been so amazing, thank you to all you guys and gals, if we, instead of taking that money and putting it into our pockets to buy new blue jeans down on Rodeo Drive, instead, if we took that money and got two brand new podcasting microphones, instead of using the two SM57 snare mics that we're using, then maybe we'd be in some good shape.
Yeah, mate. I can't wait for that, man. It's going to make me feel like a proper podcast host.
Absolutely. I think it'll be amazing. So if you guys, if we haven't talked about it enough, when Eddie went to Charlie's place, what's the mics he was using?
SM7B.
Okay, so the professional podcasting mics that Shure makes, as soon as I heard Eddie's voice, come through on that podcast, I was like, whoa, bro, I'm so used to you with your professional mic that you already have. I have a professional mic. But it sounded so podcasty. And yeah. I just immediately was like, we have to have those mics. Like, yeah. I'm personally endorsed by Audio Technica, best mics on the planet. That's all there is to it. This podcast is going to purchase mics because we are endorsed by something larger than all companies, and that is the Patreons. So Patreons, we are taking that money, investing it back in this podcast. And so we are purchasing today, actually, two SM7Bs. Eddie will get one shipped to him. I'll get one shipped to me. No help from Shure. Not that they haven't reached out, but I mean, we haven't asked them for any help. We wanted to do this with your money and with your donations and just let you know that your money is actually improving the quality of this podcast. So thank you, Patreons. We really appreciate it.
Really appreciate it. And it's funny you said we haven't reached out. You know, the Shure 215s that I've just got, right? I put them up on Instagram and a few people reached out and, you know, said, are they good? And I was like, yeah, they're amazing, mate. So I thought, you know what? Let me slide in Shure's DMs. Yeah. And going back to the endorsement episode right. where you really, you know, you cringely have to sort of, that's not even a word, where you have to sort of big yourself up. I didn't. And I just got a response and it was like, if you're looking to work with us, please fill out this form. Please state how many followers you've got, yes. what you can bring to the company and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, mate, I'm not even going to do that. I'm not even going to reply.
I'm going to just buy them. Please. It's not even worth it. Just, I hate to say it, but I just did that.
Did you?
I just did that with the... Okay, so... a while ago I was on vacation with Amber and we found this like kind of hipster clothing place and they were selling this solid cologne and it's this little silver metal box. And when you open it, it's like chapstick, but it's cologne. You just rub your fingers on it, rub it on your neck, rub it on your wrists and you're good to go. And you can keep it with you. You're not carrying it. And it doesn't smell like cologne. It's almost like I walk past you and you're like, that guy was just at the ocean. Right. While walking through trees. Like it just has a hint of cleanliness. It just smells like Mother amazing. Earth just kissed me on the cheek. So anyways, I love this stuff. Absolutely love it. So then Amber bought me more of it. They came out with bar soap. Hell yeah, they did. So Amber bought me more of it for Christmas and bought me the bar soap. So I took a picture of the whole collection, the bar soap, the deodorant, the thing, took a really good picture. Put it up on Instagram in my stories like, hey, I got this for Christmas and this was awesome. This was my Christmas present. And then I'm looking at it. I'm like, you know, so far, 6,000 people have clicked on their profile, Fulton yeah. O'Rourke. 6,000. Yeah. So I have 6,000 sticker taps going to you, not just 6,000 views. And so I reached out and... Bro, they couldn't have cared less. They must be working with like soccer stars or something. They were just like it literally just said, thanks. Like, cause I said, hey, just want to let you know, I'm a huge fan of your product. I'm not asking for anything for free, but at some point I really would love to be involved with your company. I did the whole thing that we talk about doing.
Yeah.
Like I'd like to be a part of the Fulton O'Rourke family. And blah, blah, blah. And I said, I don't know how interested you are in this stuff, but here are the stats from my most recent post, just because I wanted you to see how many people actually followed your page. And their page doesn't have that many followers. I think it has like 30,000. And then after I posted, it had like 34,000 and 6,000 people checked out their page. I thought, hey, man, we made a dent. All I got back was like, thanks so much for the support. We really appreciate it.
Oh.
I was like,
brutal.
Not a problem. Not same, a problem.
Mate, have you ever heard of Grenade? Grenade.
Of course. Every time I go overseas and I'm like, I just need some health bars, they get me the Grenade power bars.
Yeah, they are unbelievable, mate. I buy, honestly, one of them a day, at least. And I spend so much money on them. And Matt from Busted, like he's been sorted out by Grenade. And like, you know, when you get in the van and when you get in the car, he's got like boxes of them. And I was like, okay, all right, let's, and I'm on a new program. So I do the same thing, mate. I slide in their DMs and I'm like, look, I'm doing this new program at the minute. And, you know, I buy one of your bars every single day, but, you know, I was just wondering what other products would you recommend? They just sent me a few and I was like, okay, cool. And then I posted something about them. I think I posted a picture or something, or I sent them a picture of me with like all the bars that I'd bought, like all the empty wrappers.
Okay.
And they've just replied with a thumbs up. is it. That is it. And I was like, mate.
So good.
It's so funny. Like, these companies, that's mate, so like, it's like, I feel like saying to them, like, guys, honestly, it's quality over quantity here. Like, we, you know, if totally. One of us says something, we'll all jump on board and we'll all like check it out. But they just don't want to know.
You know, it's been weird. I mean, my first introduction to that world, you know, do you remember we had Carter McClain on the podcast? And he was the first person that suggested to me, he's like, dude, you should just call that company. And I think I was drinking some bottled green tea at the time. And I'm like, why? And he's like, they'll hook you up. Like, you have a massive following, but all this stuff. And I was like, no, I'll just go buy some tea. It's not a big deal. And then I was like, wow, that's right. Just because he's got this very recognizable, famous gig, like, I am the drummer of The Lion King on Broadway. Mm. He has endorsements with bars, energy bars, and with coconut water and with different things. And I started thinking in that world, like, oh man, okay, I could, you know, maybe I get a little solid cologne, get a little Burt's beeswax for the lips, get some. No, it didn't work out at all.
I was going to say, it leads us onto the topic of this podcast, mate. It's like, you know, like trying to just say to yourself, okay, am I worth this? Can I give value to this company? Or is it like, you know, I'm sort of blinded by just followers and actually I don't have any worth at all? It's just, it's a funny, because I always see people who have a large amount of followers get these free products, but in actual fact, they're not really giving any value and they're only getting them because they've got a large following and, you know, they're not really into the product. So no one really buys it.
But it comes down to who's controlling the marketing at the company. The tea company that I work with now, their marketing company, they fully get it. Like, when I told them, look, because we had like the drum world is like, how'd you get your Meinl endorsement? Some other drummer was like, Eddie's hecka good. And they were like, all right, we'll send it on out. Yeah. You know, it's that easy sometimes. The food industry and the clothing industry, totally different thing, where there's meetings after meetings after meetings before there's ever a deal done. And when I had my very first meeting with Aya and their marketing team, I just told them straight up, I'm probably not going to push your company. I'm going to push matcha. And hopefully that'll trigger people to ask me, okay, I'm going to get into matcha, but when I got on Amazon or whatever, there was 75 different types. What should I get? That's when I'm going to mention your company, because I truly believe in it and I'm using it personally myself. Mm. And I was so shocked that the guy that was the head of marketing was super on board with it. He's like, that is the best way to go. We don't need you to post our logo on everything you do. Just teach people, like, inform them about the world of tea and matcha. And from there, the organic marketing engine will kick in. Definitely the people at my solid cologne company didn't go to that same marketing school. Because I pretty much got the thumbs up like you got. And so yeah. I think that, but you know, what it comes down to is you shouldn't be writing any company. With Grenade, with me, with Fulton and Rourke and Aya, we shouldn't be writing those companies in the first place unless we're willing to get turned down and still use the product.
Yeah, exactly.
Because otherwise it's a hollow endorsement. It's like, well, I'll use it if it's free. Like, I've had so many students, and I'm sure you've gone through this before, but I've had so many students that were cracking into the endorsement world and they were like, oh, I just got offered, you know, 75% off of Jimmy John's sticks. And I'm like, do you believe in Jimmy John's sticks, or are you just doing it because they're 75% off? Because at some point, what if your career does blow up and now you can have Promark, Vic Firth, Vader, but you're going to look kind of weird that you were with Jimmy John for 2 weeks and now you're over to another company. And so, you know, I when I got the, like, thanks for your support, I wasn't really that bummed, because it's like, well, I mean, that's kind of what my email said. I am supporting you guys and I'm going to continue to buy your product. My only disappointment is, like, it's not that I want free product. I don't care about that much. I want to be associated with your company because I'm proud of what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
And if one of the best ways to do that is to be your loyal customer, then I'm happy to do that. Like, and I've already, since getting the proverbial thumbs up from Fulton and Rourke, I've already ordered 3 more bars of soap. So,
well, there you go. And it might be a test, mate. They might be saying, all right, Mike, we'll see.
Let's see.
They probably
are you going to just start rubbing eucalyptus leaves all over your body?
They've definitely got a couple burner accounts just following you now to see what other fragrances you use. But
oh my God. Real quick. Are you under attack by all the hoochies that have fake accounts? Because it's never been this bad. It's just like one follower following 9,000 accounts, chick in a bra.
Yeah.
You know, like, man, love your stuff. And I'm like, stop it. You're what's going to make someone else look at my account and think that I'm faking this stuff.
Yeah. I instantly
I have to block them all.
Block them all.
Yeah, block.
And yep. I'm pretty sure I blocked a couple of innocent accounts as well along the way. By accident, because it's like when you get a few, there must be like a real one in totally. The middle. And I like it happened the other day, right. And I went on his page, and I was like, "I'm really sorry, mate, but I can't tell if this page is legit." So, seeing right, as you're yeah, in the yeah. middle of two fake accounts, you're getting blocked. So some guy,
you're in a fishnet tank top, so I'm blocking you. there's nothing I can do. You have to go. Yeah, it's been a funny time that, like, even when I'm scrolling through. Like new followers or like notifications, I kind of turn my phone towards the wife just so that she'll see the block in action. Like, that's not a real person. It's just a picture of some random chick in college. Yeah. It's not real. It never happened. I don't know this person. There's no DMs going on. Yeah. But I feel like I've been under attack from that a little bit too much lately. So hopefully Instagram will get that sorted out. That was fun. Okay. Before we move on to our ego topic, which I'm very excited to talk about, we're going to get to know each other a little bit better.
Okay.
Our Patreon suggested a newlywed game. This is our newlywed game for this week's podcast.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you one awkward or weird thing you do at home, and you could ask me the same, but I want to know, like, if you were in the middle of a typical Eddie moment and I just walked in to surprise you and Rona and Travi, what would I see and go, what the fuck are you doing?
Pretty much everything, mate. One weird thing that I do that Rona's now used to is I sit in the bath for honestly like an hour and a half.
I'm sorry, what? I've never even used the bath in our house. What do you mean you sit in the bath?
I love
Doesn't
a bath.
Doesn't it get cold?
Yeah, I top it up, mate. I top it up with hot water. I love a bath.
Shut up. So you let like 25 minutes go by, you drain it a little, top it off.
Yeah, top it up. And like, it's like, it's weird, mate. It's like an office for me. It's like my thinking space. And it's like, I go through these weird sort of like changes where the first time I get in the bath, I'm like, oh, this is amazing. I relax. Then I get my phone out. Then I'm thinking of ideas. And then honestly, like, it got to the point where Rona was like, what are you doing in there, mate? Like, what are you doing? Like, I don't trust whatever you're doing in there. So like, I have to leave
too long.
I was like, look, I'll leave the door unlocked. You can come in at any time. Surprise me. I'm not doing anything weird. I just chill, mate. I just chill. I love it.
Oh,
so,
my
yeah,
God.
That's a weird thing.
Yeah,
I do.
I think that is a very long time for a man of any age to sit in water. It's just, I mean, that's, but you know what? If it works for you, I you know, if we didn't have COVID, I'd still be floating right now. Did you and I ever talk about that? The float tanks that I was doing?
I would love to do one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. When you come here, I mean, because you're only going to come here once COVID is all wrapped up, but I'll definitely take you to a sensory deprivation tank. They're amazing, absolutely, and it's the same thing. I mean, it's just any place that you can find that sense of meditation, you know, hit that zone where your thoughts start going a million miles an hour, but they're also in slow motion at the exact same time, and that's I love that. That's why I like long drives. So even though I wouldn't float in my own personal bathtub.
It is weird. I'll admit
I mean, is it just warm water or is there soap involved?
Oh, there's
is there like
loads,
bubbles?
Loads of bubbles, mate. Loads of bubbles. And then like as hot as I can get it, because I love the sauna and I love the steam room as well. And it's just like, it's just, mate, I love it, mate. I absolutely
you know what?
Love it.
When you come here and stay with us, like we have a hot tub in the backyard.
Oh,
like
mate.
A really nice hot tub. You can just stay in there all day. I'll have the campers just come and sit around you and ask questions.
I would love that.
Your hands up on the.
I would love that, mate. So what about?
Oh my goodness.
So what about you? Is there anything that I would see or you know see you do that would be out of the
honestly
ordinary?
It wouldn't. I don't really do anything weird because when I get home, it's such a time to unwind and unplug. And honestly, it's my time to connect with Amber and kind of go over everything. But I do think I have like a food thing that I don't think it's that weird, but from everybody that makes like this weird vomiting face, I guess it is weird. I don't know.
Okay.
So when I was a kid, my parents got divorced pretty early. So my mom was a full-time working mom to support our family. And I went to childcare or daycare every day.
Yeah.
And obviously they have foods there. And there's just some of those foods left over from daycare that crept into my psyche. And I just can't get them out of my life. Like I crave them so bad. So if Amber and I go off the rails with nutrition and just full blown, all right, screw it. What does it matter? We're fat. Let's get over it. It's usually mac and cheese. Like mac and cheese in America, there's the pasta is crap. Then you pour some random ass chemical powder on top, and then you know smoke starts happening. And then you put in some dairy, and it's a horrible dish of nutrition. So we love it.
Okay,
no big deal there. But I cannot eat mac and cheese without two cans of tuna in it.
Two cans of tuna in mac and cheese. That is a bit weird. That is a bit weird. Because this is the thing. I said it the other day, actually, to Rona. I was like, oh, I might have tuna pasta. And I was a bit like, tuna pasta is a bit weird as well. But tuna mac and cheese is, I can't imagine like thick mac right. and cheese with tuna in it.
I know. It's heaven. I get it. I understand how much you want it right now. I do. But it is one of those things when I just crack open the old tuna can, I'm just like, oh God, that smells like buttered ass. Like,
yeah.
And so Amber, who's just craving this glorious mac and cheese and it's gooey and it's happy, and she's putting in extra cheddar, like real cheese. And then I just crack open a couple cans of tuna. Like, I get it, but there's something about it. It was like the only thing you ever had at daycare were these meals that they could make for 60 kids.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like this huge vat of mac and cheese, and they're just dumping in tuna because kids need protein. And they're like, well, we're going to put in some beef, but screw it. We'll put in, you know, tuna.
Yeah.
And so that just kind of became the thing. I'm a fan of tuna and mac and cheese. And I don't think, other than that, I feel pretty confident when you come to stay here. I feel confident that you'll leave without having to ask me, bro, what was that?
Yeah.
Like, I think you'll be kind of like, okay, that was pretty normal. Pretty normal. If all that I do is wake up and be like, hey, babe, where's Eddie? By the way, you're not the babe. She's the babe. And I'm like, babe, where's Eddie? And she goes, oh, he's out in the backyard. He's out in the backyard in the spa. It's like, all right. If that's the weirdest it gets, I can handle that.
Yeah, I'm doing this new thing at the minute as well, where I leave the fridge door open. I did it earlier, and Rona thinks I've got flipping dementia, mate. I walk up to it and I'm like, I open it and I just walk away. I don't take anything out of it. I'm so weird like that, mate. She's like, you've done it again, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I open the fridge, look, don't take anything out, and walk away. Bizarre.
I think that's just bad etiquette. I'd probably kick you out of my house.
I know, mate. I know.
So. All right, let's get into our episode. We're talking about ego today. And I think the most important thing to realize with ego is that it's not as negative as it comes off. Anytime you hear the word ego, it's always with a negative connotation of like, he's got such a big ego, she's got such a big ego, that person's so egotistical. And I think that having a healthy ego is massively important. And I don't think you can actually succeed in sport or in the world of arts without a healthy ego. You have to be able to pick yourself up when things are going bad, and no one's going to do it for you. So I think it's okay to have a healthy ego, but we're going to explore today what's the difference and where's that line between having a healthy ego and being able to really believe in yourself. And then when you cross that line into the negative side, where you start to become cocky, you start to look down on other people that are doing the same thing as you, but maybe not as well or not as experienced. And we obviously, all of us want to avoid that because we never want to head into that direction. So when you think of ego, like, what's going through your mind? I mean, do you see it as a negative thing? Do you see it as a positive thing?
It's an odd one. I see it kind of like, I don't know, imposter syndrome in a way. I don't think I have an ego at all. It's something that if someone has too much of an ego, it's a massive turn off for me, mate. It's like, you know, it's I don't like it. But like you said, I think when you're an artist and musician and you're wanting to like turn that into a career, I think it is important to sort of know your worth, so to speak. And I guess that is an ego, right? Knowing that you are at a certain standard, or you're good enough for this, or, you know, that you are worthy of this position, whether it be a clinic or a gig. I think that is important, because I think if you do suffer from imposter syndrome, then it's going to really get in your way. And I think that is something that I'm sort of, yeah, I feel like it's more and more important now for drummers to have a positive ego, to be like, actually, no, I'm good enough, mate. I can post this video. I can get this gig. I can do that. And yeah, so I definitely think it's something that when I, you know, I just think it's really, really important to have a healthy ego, like you're saying, mate. I think it's really important. I didn't really describe that well, but it's...
I'm with you, buddy. I think you have to be able to self-diagnose the situation that you're in, the skill level you have, and the hours you've put in to get that skill. And if it's, if it all equals out, then you should have a good opinion about yourself. I mean, that's really what a healthy ego is. Having a healthy ego means that you have a good opinion about yourself and you're proud of yourself and your accomplishments. Now, if you're a beginning drummer and you're playing the most basic pop rock beat, you should have a healthy ego about that in reference to, well, you've played drums for 3 months. You've been practicing an hour a day. This is actually a very huge accomplishment. You should be very proud of it. You don't have to walk around with your chest stuck out like you just changed the drum game, but this is where you are, and that's okay. And I think we need way more of that, especially in social media. We need to be celebrating those people that are very new in their journey, very young in their journey, early in their timeline, and celebrating them in the way of saying, like when you and I see a drummer that plays a basic groove and a basic fill, we don't judge them against, you know, Travis Barker and Dave Weckl. We judge them against ourselves when we had been playing for 3 months. And it's like, wow, that's actually really good, because I was not that solid with it, you know? And I think that it's okay wherever you're at. You don't have to wait, I guess, to develop a healthy ego. You don't have to wait until you're great at the drums to be like, well, now I have a good opinion of myself. It's like, your opinion should be based off of where you're at in the journey and how much work you've put towards that.
Yeah, good point, man. Good point. And I just feel like, you know, like there has to be that self, that worth of knowing that, you know, even when it comes to something like getting paid for your first gig, I think that's a big question mark over a lot of people's heads. It's like, oh my God, yeah, I'm doing this first session gig. I don't know how much to charge. I don't know if I should be getting paid at all. And I think it's really important to know your worth, mate. And especially as a drum teacher, I remember when I first started sort of turning the camera on, there was definitely that question mark over my head, like, oh my God, am I good enough to do this? Mm-hmm. Am I a good enough teacher, a good enough sort of filmmaker, whatever you want to call it? And I do think that, yeah, it's very, very important to sort of reverse engineer everything that you've done and go, no, actually, I deserve to be here, and I'm gonna smash it.
I think that you know, when you mentioned the imposter syndrome, ego and having a good ego and a positive ego, and that's what pulls you out of the imposter syndrome. So the negative ego and the self-doubt and the bad wolf, that all creeps in to tell you you're not worth it. You're not good enough. You don't belong here. You should not get paid for this. And it's having that healthy ego to just kind of like combat that and say, whoa, 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 whoa. You've put in the work. You've put in the time. You know, when it comes to teaching, I always make this very clear for all of my students that are thinking about getting into teaching, and they're like, man, I want to teach so bad. Let's say we have an intermediate drummer that wants to teach. They're like, I want to teach so bad. It's bubbling up inside of me, and I have to like explain this to other people, but I'm not very good at the drums. And it's like, okay, stop right there. Very good in reference to what? To Buddy Rich? Like, the only thing that matters in teaching is the distance between the teacher and the student. So if you're somebody that's an intermediate drummer and you truly have a desire to teach and to pass on information to other human beings, and then you have a student that's never touched sticks, you are an expert compared to that person. So it's fine for you to teach them, but it's also up to you to know when that student is closing the gap because they're practicing, you know, longer hours than you are. They're closing the gap. You have to be willing to pass them on to someone else and say, look, in all honesty, you're at a place where I can't show you much more. You should look into this guy or this girl because they can take you to that next level. But we all, you know, should be proud of the things we're accomplishing. And I think that ego is something that we can't keep pushing off to the side as like this negative thing. Like, well, I don't have any ego at all. It's like, well, you have an ego. Mm. The question is it positive or negative? Now, it can be negative in the way that it brings you down because you talk trash about yourself. No one in the world will ever talk as much crap to you as you do to yourself.
Yeah.
No one in life has ever come up to me and been like, you're honestly not worth it, Mike. But I've said it to myself a million times.
Mate, of course, mate. Mate, it's the devil's on my shoulder the whole time just telling me that. It's funny, man. It's funny. But yeah, it's such a good point. It's such a good point. I wonder, have you got an example of when, you know, your ego got you a clinic slot, a position on a drum festival where, you know, your ego, your positive ego motivated you and pushed you to that point? Is there like a
thing? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's one where I can think of that my ego got me through the event because it was like a 2-day event for the artist as far as setup and sound check was day one, then the event was day two. So this was PASIC 2012, I believe, or 2013. It was my first time doing PASIC. PASIC in America it's NAMM without really any gear. It's just clinics all day long. But I mean, the roster is always just silly, especially back then it was just crazy. So I got PASIC, I think through Meinl. I know Vader was a sponsor of it for me at the time. Was I DW or Gretsch? I might have been DW back then. Anyways, so I got PASIC, and PASIC has a lot of different rooms that you perform in. And I had a very specific cafeteria looking room in my mind. Then I showed up, and the person that was kind of my handler walked me to the room that I was going to be performing. And it was like, oh, this is the main PASIC room. I've seen these curtains. I know this room. This is 3,500 people or whatever. I mean, maybe it's not that many, but it's a lot. Yeah. It's as far as you can see, chairs. And, you know,
I'm sweating now, mate. My heart's going.
As somebody that's played O2 Arena and somebody that's played a clinic, 100 chairs is way more intimidating than 10,000 people standing.
Right. Way more, man.
Way more. It's the worst.
Times a million. Just sitting.
Yeah, exactly. So I walk in, I'm like, are we picking up a famous drummer? Why are we in here? Like, and they're like, no, you got to set up your kit and do sound check. And I was like, this is the main room. And I'm like, yep. I'm like, oh, crap. And I hadn't seen the schedule yet. And so at this point, I'm kind of like, okay, you know, I mean, this is almost 10 years ago. It's not me now. It was this new young teacher on the scene teaching on the internet. I was like, what the hell am I doing here? And then I see the schedule, and the schedule is, you know, drummer, Chad Smith from the Chili Peppers, Mike Johnston, Dave Weckl. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Well, come on. I don't want to. Now I just want to go home and cry. So the negative ego is kicking in. Like, what are you doing between these two legends? You don't belong here. You should not be here right now. Yeah. And so what I did was I took out my iPhone 1 or whatever I had at the time. And I just stood on the stage and I took like a panorama of what I'd be seeing. And I just went straight to the hotel room and I just stared at that picture and ran through the clinic like 5 times in my head, staring at the exact scene that I would be seeing, even though there were empty chairs. I wanted to be putting myself in that moment. So the preparation kind of is ego's food. Ego needs preparation to excel, because the more you prepare for something, the more you start feeling a little bit of confidence. And you're like, that's why I always say preparation equals relaxation. When you prepare for something, you relax because you know you've done all you could do. So I was prepping and going through all the Michael Jordan mind games and playing out all the scenarios of what could go wrong. And if I dropped a stick and if I tripped on the mic cable, what do I do? So at that point, the next day when I have to come and finally get ready for the thing backstage, my ego was at an even level. But then I walked in and I saw Dave Weckl tuning up his kit, and I had to set up like right next to him. And it crumbled all over again. And all of a sudden I had my eyes pointed at the ground. I didn't make eye contact with anybody. I wasn't engaged. I wasn't myself, because I was just like, I don't belong here, man.
Yeah. Let's get this sort of done and let's get it over with, sort of thing.
Exactly. Like, let me just completely train wreck this thing and fly home and actually just book a flight to a random city and just live out my days in Albuquerque, New Mexico and be like, whatever. People will be like, do you play drums? I'll be like, no, I don't even know what that means. Yeah. So that's kind of where I was at mind space wise. And then I made the best decision I could have possibly, which is I went into the crowd for the next few clinics because my kit was all set up and I just started talking to people. And the more that I talked to people, they're like, oh man, I came here from wherever just to see you. And I'm like, you know, Chad Smith is on before me, right? Like the guy from the Chili Peppers. And they're like, yeah. No, I'm going to see that too. But I flew here to see you. And it was like, what? Okay. And then I'm talking to this person. They're saying like how excited they are for the clinic. And it was like, okay, now my ego's getting fed in a positive way. And yeah, of course it's self-serving. Why deny that? Like, I wish I was the most, you know, non-egotistical person in the world. But I'm telling you, before an event like that, I needed my ego to be blown up a little bit. I needed someone else to believe in me because I couldn't believe in myself.
Yeah.
You know, and so that really helped a lot. And then, honestly, when I got onto the stage, I mean, at that moment, it was like, okay, if you don't believe in yourself, then you're going to have to manufacture it right now. Because some of the greatest drummers on the planet are in this room. They're watching you. Some of the others are backstage tuning their kits. This is as much pressure as you can get. Everyone that's attending this event is studying percussion in college. So they all know, like, you can't mess up your speaking because they all know everything. I think that with that, my own ability to say, you know what, screw it. I'm done with this pity party. I've put in the hours. I may not be where I wish I was with the drumming, and I don't think I'll ever be there, but I'm exactly where I am. So first of all, do not overplay. Like, you are exactly yes. where you are.
Mate, great advice. Great advice.
You're not going to get better on the walk up to the stage. You are exactly as good as you are.
I'm a sucker for that. Oh, it's a clinic. Totally. I'll just chuck in this little bit. Yeah, now you've overplayed, Eddie. Nice one.
Yeah, idiot. I've never been able to pull this off in my perfect conditioned studio in Folsom, California with no audience, but today it'll work. It was just a little bit of that. Like, look, man, you are as good as you are, but the one thing that you've put your entire life into is handling a crowd and a microphone and teaching. You can teach your ass off and you know it. Let's go. And so that kind of, it was more like, all right, I'm going to drum the way I drum. That's going to happen. But I'm not going to put any pressure on myself about it because it is exactly what it is. But I am going to just excel like crazy on the teaching thing because I actually do believe I belong here for that. And that's something that, like I said, the preparation, and for me, it was teaching since I was 17 years old, private lessons and everything. It prepared me for that moment. And so that's where, like, you know, the ego is never something that just shows up and gets you through something. The ego is something that's just trying to keep the negative self-talk and the imposter syndrome at bay. And it's like, the more you can feed that ego in a positive light, like just one person saying, oh, I flew here to see you. It's like, oh, let me put that into the ego's like food bank and then just keep going and realizing, no, like I can do this one thing pretty good. You know, it would be like me saying, Eddie, I need you to give a 15-minute speech on politics, or you can play one LTA song. It's like, well, dude, I can do that. It's like, okay, well, you should have a pretty healthy ego. Like, you were in the band, you wrote the drum parts, you know you can do that. So what about you, man? Has there been a time where ego just played a big role in you getting through something?
Yeah, there was a few examples of this. I was going to use the clinic example, and then there's a better one. So I played one show for Dua Lipa in China, which I've mentioned, I told you about before.
You never shut up about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, guys. He does not.
I love that.
I was in China with Dua Lipa. Crazy.
Got it on a t-shirt.
Told you about that?
That was like the most intimidating, weird situation I've ever been in, mate. It was bizarre, like in a really good way, in a positive way, and I learned a lot from it. But there's the MD for Dua is a guy called William, and he's a wicked guy, but he's very specific, very, very specific. Doesn't want you to play anything but what he wants you to play. And when I say that, you know, you hit the right crash, he wants you to hit the left crash. But it's great. You know, he's like, he's got his thing down and it's wicked, but it was very different to what I was used to. And then he gave me a call when I was on the busted thing and said, look, like, do you want to come and do this show? I can't do it, because he was the drummer as well.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah, mate, I'd love to. Thanks for asking me, blah, blah, blah. And then went to the rehearsals. I think we ran through it a couple times. But with those big gigs, mate, it's like the rehearsal room is full of about 30 people, mate. Do you know what I mean? It's like all the crew, the front of house, the mixing engineer, all the guitar tech, it's just the most intimidating situation. And it quite literally felt like, and I think, well, they were all just watching me, you know, like I'd never played with these guys before. And it was just like, oh, so that was the first sort of step. It was like, right, smash this audition rehearsal. What is it? I don't know, but let's just fucking smash it. A lot of pad work as well. Which I wasn't used to, and it was his kit, it was his setup, it was his.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it wasn't. I wasn't playing anything of mine apart from my own sticks, and there was, you know, pads in a very sort of specific place, and I had to just remember all those, and it was, you know, they were playing melodies, so I had to get all those parts right. It was just quite intense, and my ego had to be like, Eddie, you've got this, mate. Like, come on, man. Like, stop. Like you said, stop the pity party. Big deep breath. They're all going to watch you, but you're fucking sick at the drums, mate. So play them. Do you know what I mean? It was that sort of like,
yeah,
actually, let's get my sort of inner Conor McGregor out and just get me through this. But in reality, I was like a shaken, skinny mess. It was just the worst thing, but amazing at the same time. And then fast forward to the show. It was obviously in China. I proposed to Rona in Japan before. So I flew from Japan to China, and then Rona flew home on her own. And even that, like getting all the visas and stuff, it was just crazy, mate. It was just like talking to a million people.
Pure chaos.
And so the show, get there, have the day before to sort of sound check. I met Dua like on stage after playing like a couple of songs. And it was just this like overwhelming fear of just, mate, you haven't really practiced that. Well, you have practiced in your own time, but you haven't rehearsed with a band. You've never met Dua. You know, this is a big thing. It was a fashion event for Chanel. It was like Chinese royalty and stuff were there. It was crazy. And I was just like, okay, yeah, everyone's sort of watching me here, and you know, I can't make a mistake. And then the show was the next day, and it was just the same as you, mate, in my hotel room going through. I sat on the bed, I put all these pillows out, and they were my pads. They were my Roland pads. And I was going through all the movements, and I was going through all the hand gestures. And William's a left-handed drummer, so a lot of his stuff was left-hand lead, which made it even worse.
Oh, my God.
But it was one of the best things to happen to me as a professional drummer, mate. And I'm very thankful that William asked me to do it, actually, because it was a challenge in more ways than one, even just playing what is there. Don't hit that crash if there's no crash there. And adrenaline and vibe takes over when you're playing, you know, and you're just like, oh yeah, I want to hit the crash. And it was just a completely different situation to what I was used to. And I remember just the whole lead up, just thinking, you cannot make a single mistake here, Eddie. Do you know what I mean?
It's a gymnastics routine. Like, you have to stick the landing. Like, they will dock you a point for, like you said, even if it's something as like, it's not a rim shot, it's a normal snare hit. We don't want that. And it's like, oh my gosh, how can you hear that?
The snare was triggered, so I couldn't play any ghost notes. It was just like, quite literally, every element of that gig was completely different. There was backing singers, there was dancers, there was all this kind of stuff. And it was amazing. I'm very, very grateful for it. But it was definitely that situation of, right, before we go on here, Eddie, let's go out there, fucking chest out, Conor McGregor, I've got this, mate. And I'll, you know, you won't, you know, Dua, you won't even realize that your normal drummer's not here. The crew, you won't even realize that, you know, I'm hitting the drums harder than William because I'm going to hit him at the same dynamic level. I'm just going to make everyone's job easy, and I'm going to smash it and then go home. And it did. I did well, but I tell you what, it was that time where it was like, please let the good ego come out here. And it did. But, you know, but
that's the thing, is I think that ego and that process that I went through for PASIC, the process you went through for that, first of all, that doesn't go away. I mean, I'm assuming you probably had the Dua Lipa experience all over again on your Marco clinic.
Yeah.
And I've had it a million times where I'm like, this is my 27th drum festival. What am I nervous about? And it's like, so what happens is you learn the process of that and you know that, okay, I've never walked out on stage yet without the Conor McGregor, without the Michael Jordan, without the Steve Jobs ego, because in that, you know, die or fly, ride or die, whatever you want to call it, fear or flight, like in that moment, it all kicks in and it's like, okay, I don't have a choice. What am I going to do? Give up?
Yeah.
Walk away? Like, no, there's no choice. I have to nail this and my career depends on it. And so now I'm actually familiar with the process. The process is a little bit of self-doubt, wondering like, so you flew me all the way to Taiwan to play drum set for 45 minutes? I'm a drum teacher in Folsom, California. What am I doing here? That yeah. happens on every flight. Then I get there. Then I meet the people. Then we do sound check and I can't feel my hands and I don't want my hands don't work during sound check. You know, and they're like, can you test the kit for me? And I'm like a 4-year old still not properly sound checking the kit. I still play a damn drum solo instead of giving the dude a groove. And I, you know, and then as soon as that's over, I'm like, why don't you just give the man a groove? Yeah. So anyways, the process is still there. And then it's the hotel room, just like you said, and me going through the clinic one note at a time and really dialing things out. And I'm honestly in my hotel room, I'm standing up doing the whole thing. I'm speaking every part, go through the whole thing, show up in the morning and it's time to go. And now it's like, well, we're in it. You know, I was kind of hoping there'd be a thunderstorm and they'd cancel the event, but we're in it. It's happening. Now let's just commit to it. And in that moment, that healthy ego, actually what I would consider to be a non-healthy cocky ego, if it was full time, I actually need it for the next 2 hours. Like I need you to come in. And like you said, I need to be a badass. I've got this. I'm very good at this thing that I've been hired to do. And then as soon as I hit the last note and the crowd's clapping, then I'm just like, hey, Connor, if you could just go back in your cage for the next 6 weeks.
Yeah,
I don't want anyone to think I'm that person, but I needed that to get through this moment.
Yeah, my inner Connor just is not there. It's almost like Connor's, this is such a weird, I don't know what I'm just about to say here, but it's like Connor turns around, right, and gives me a little wink. And says, look,
right.
I did you a favor there, mate. And I'm like,
right.
I appreciate it. And it's, but that's what I love about this instrument, mate. It's, and this is why I think this is a whole different subject, but this is why I think session players are massively underrated. You know, to learn, not talking about me specifically here, just in general, to learn someone else's music, have a very short practice time with them, to go play on stage and to not make a mistake. Is an incredible thing to do. And that's why I love when I see, you know, session players or a band of an artist who are respected as artists themselves. I love that.
Well, think about the video that you put up on our Patreon page of the Stevie Wonder thing. Like that song had so many ensemble figures in it, so many kicks and hits that aren't in the original tune. And it was floating from Stevie tune to Stevie tune. But I've always found that to be the hardest thing to do is if you have to play an original and they change it on you, not that big of a deal. When you have to play a song that's been in your mind and in your heart for 30 years, and then they completely change the arrangement.
Yeah.
That's a scary thing. I always think about what Ash was doing on The Voice UK and what Nate Morton does on The Voice here in the US. And I'm like, dude, you just had to play Beat It by Michael Jackson in an arrangement that it was never meant to be in. How did you not just revert back to the original hits and the original kicks and go to the chorus? You know, it's like they just shortened the verse by 2 bars for no reason, just because they have a TV or a commercial break coming up. Yeah. How could you remember that? And so, yeah, I have a massive respect for that. And that's why I think it's so silly when people try to compare drummers, like, yeah, but he's better than she is. And I'm like, they're in such different worlds. Like, let them exist in their world and just celebrate them for that. Session players, you know, Kenny Aronoff is a guy, like you mentioned the Kennedy Honors that you watched.
Yeah, I've seen him.
I went
to dinner with Kenny, mate.
Okay, so you know Kenny.
It was the most mental meal I've ever been to in my whole entire life. I couldn't believe it.
There's no way you can mention Kenny Aronoff without being like, okay, is it me? Or is this the craziest dude ever in the best way? But if you ever wanted to go back in time to what it was like to live in the world of rock stars, in a positive way, that's Kenny, man. He's seen it all. He's sunglasses indoor with a scarf in the summer.
Yeah.
But when it comes time to do those things, he does it better than anyone in the world. Yeah. So how was your dinner?
Oh, mate, it was so funny. It was the first NAM I ever went to, and it was just after the Rhythm cover. And it was a tamamil. And it was, you know, Ian was going to come, and he actually fell sick for some weird reason. And I was so close not to go because I didn't know anyone else there. I just met the old Tama A&R. So it was a bit like, yeah, again, it was just one of these situations where it's like, no, I deserve to be here. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Didn't know anyone, sat down, I sat next to Kenny, and then like we just had the flipping best time. And then Zildjian was, they had a little meal going on next to us, and I was just didn't know what to expect. And it was one of the funniest meals I've ever experienced in my whole entire life, mate. I don't know what to say on the podcast because I don't know whether he could hear or be like, why did you say that? But it was just he did was so funny.
Exactly. And I think like my first time meeting him was at a drum festival in Seattle, and it was me, JP Bouvet, Todd Zuckerman, Thomas Lang, Tim Alexander from Primus, and Kenny. And I had never met him, but I've known about Kenny since I was 6 years old because he was so famous at that time. And then he just kept getting gig after gig after gig. And it was just like the craziest stuff of like the Kennedy Honors thing. And then he'd fly straight from that to the Grammys, knock that out of the park. Then he'd fly and do like two dates on American Idol because whoever their drummer was couldn't do it. You know, I mean, you just tell him what to do and he just does it.
Yeah.
And I just had never been around somebody that was on that level of like private jets and just that world that we're not a part of, you know? Mm. And it was kind of my first time seeing a drummer that was almost, and I mean this in a positive way, but almost like a lead singer where I was like, you are the man. Like you're kind of the man. Like if we get into story time, I'm probably not going to say anything because your lamest story still involves you playing like in the pyramids. Like,
yeah, so like true.
It's just crazy. And so, yeah, I think that having that was one thing that I remember when I saw Kenny, I was like, man, that's got to be nice just to have that kind of constant positive ego, positive self-worth of just like, dude, I got this. You know, I mean, think about it. Like he's going to play on this stage right after Thomas Lang at this event or JP or whoever. And he's going to play some pretty basic rock beats, but he's kind of one of the best in the world at doing that. And he knows it. So he doesn't let himself go, oh, but I'm not Thomas Lang. I'm not Steve Jordan. I'm not this. It's like, but I am Kenny Aronoff and I'm better at that than anyone else in the world. And I think that with this ego thing, that's where we want to get to is that place that we go, you're right. I'm not Dave Weckl. But I am Mike Johnston, and I'm really good at doing that. And that's what we should all be striving for, because that's where we can all win this game at the exact same time.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thinking I try to take when I'm doing a clinic. The thinking I take is I am me, and there's no one else who can be me. you know what I mean?
So that's it.
No one else is going to play this cymbal, how I'm going to hit it, because we're all individual. And I think that's a really positive thing to think about just in life in general as a drummer, you know, just it doesn't matter how quote unquote good you are or where you are in that journey. It's like, mate, just be you. At the end of the day with these festivals and stuff like that, even Instagram, people just like watching drums. And if you're different, then I think that's something to be, you know, respected and admired, that, you know, it doesn't matter how technical, as long as it's just you and it's different.
I think the only thing that we don't even know that we're looking for, but we all respond to, is confidence.
Yeah.
When you're confident at whatever you're doing, I've never questioned that it wasn't difficult enough. It's like, man, this cat's really getting into this.
Yeah. And enjoying it.
I'm into it as well. Yeah, and exactly. And there's happiness and confidence.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I love it, man.
You know, like you said, with the whole, we have to be ourselves thing, I think that that's a very good representation of, oops, I think my camera just went out, but you can still hear me though, right?
Oh, I can hear you. Yeah. You frozen in a very weird position though.
Sorry about that. sorry that you have to look at that now for the next 20 minutes, but I'll plug the camera in next time. So anyways, I think that like what I was going to say is that that's a problem with society right now in some places, is that we're always looking for everything to enforce our beliefs, what we do, who we are as people, and all of that. And that's not a healthy thing. Like, we should be, I don't want to go to an ice cream shop and see vanilla and then try it and be like, oh, can I try the vanilla next to it and the vanilla next to it and the vanilla next to it? Like, the whole point is I want to try different things. And that's what we have to do with our own self-identity and our own healthy ego, is realize I'm just a different flavor than everybody else, and I deserve to be here. And I think once we get to that place, then we're in a good place.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, I'm even like that sometimes with like what to post on Instagram sometimes. You know, you're like, you're feeling a groove vibe. You've just been watching, I don't know, this person. And then you go, just before you sit down at the kit, you watch another guy or girl shed out a flipping chop, and you're like, actually, that's what I should be doing. It's just so...
Well, Instagram is the world's biggest drum festival. It never stops. Yeah, it's just constant, like, scroll through and see more people and more people. And I think that we, hopefully by the end of today or this podcast, you guys have realized that, first of all, whatever you're going through as far as the journey from self-doubt to self-confidence, that is a normal thing, but that journey is a skill set that you can get better at, and you can speed up that process. I haven't stopped doubting myself. I just get to self-confidence a lot faster than I used to, and with a lot less drama. I mean, I don't call my wife freaking out like, oh my God, I don't belong here anymore. It's more of just a mild, like, I can't believe this is happening. I'm just a drum teacher. What am I doing here? And then within an hour, it's like, no, I deserve to be here. Now give these people what they came to see.
Yeah.
And so you just get better at talking yourself out of that self-doubt.
And if you're ever in a position, listeners, that you are scared of, I cannot recommend enough just doing those things. The amount I've learned about the instrument and myself and just life in general from just putting yourself in a situation that you're dreading, mate. I mean, even playing drums in front of one person that you don't know is terrifying. Let alone playing in front of a clinic. But flipping hell, mate. This pre-workout's kicked in. Jesus.
yeah, buddy. Why don't you get on Instagram and DM them right now and see if they can get you 10 pounds of that stuff?
But I might do. I love this stuff. I'm addicted to it. But no, I truly believe that, mate. Like, if you're listening and you know, you've got this gig or you've got this audition and you're thinking, oh, you know, I would rather just sort of shy away from it, you know. I'm not going to get it anyway. No. I honestly, mate, go for it. Go for
it. Do it. 100%. Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode exploring the good sides and the bad sides of ego. And like I said, sometimes, even though we don't ever want to have that cocky ego in those high pressure situations, we almost have to have just a reserve of it that we can open up at those times and say, okay, real quick, Michael Jordan, I don't like the way you treat your teammates, but if you could just show up for 5 seconds and get me through this, that would be awesome. And like you said, it's like, whether it's Jordan or Phil Collins or Steve Jobs or Conor McGregor, they just give you a wink and go, hey, quit bitching, let's go.
Yeah,
and like, mate, that's what you need, you know.
It's like, you know, like if you're a weird analogy then. It's just like if you in this situation and, like, you know, let's say you're in this fight with this weird zombie thing, right? And you're getting beaten up, and then all of a sudden Connor comes up and just fucking just helps you knock him out. I wanted to use like a fight analogy, but I'm not a violent person. I didn't want to talk about
fighting. I think you really crushed it, man. I mean,
did I crush it?
No, but whatever.
No, I
mean, our friendship is still intact.
I crushed it.
I know what you meant.
I crushed it earlier when I said it's like Connor walking away and giving you a wink, and then I just went too flipping far, mate. I went
Sometimes
too far,
you just
listeners.
Gotta walk away, buddy.
I'm sorry. Right.
Well, we're gonna walk away now. I hope you guys enjoyed episode 20. If you can, please head on over to our Patreon page and support this podcast. That's what keeps it ad-free. And we are going to be doing some Zoom calls with the Patreons this month. And it's just a good place for us to all hang out and chat. And like I said, that's how this thing is staying ad-free. It's also what's going to make this podcast sound a lot better next week when we have our Shure SM7Bs purchased and paid for by the Patreons. I can't even tell you how many voice notes have been just about that, where we're like, oh my God, we're getting microphones from the Patreons.
I love it.
So
mate,
please do not ever think that we take it for granted or that we don't appreciate it. But until then, episode 20 is in the can.
Bye bye.
great analogy about the zombie, dude. Well done.
I was like, oh fuck, I can't talk about being in a fight and getting fucked up by someone, and then your mate comes over and starts knocking him out. That was just too aggressive. Not the vibe.
Right. So you're just going to pull it back to an imaginary fight with zombies and have Conor McGregor show up.
I was like, I might just like use like a Street Fighter analogy. And I was like, what am I on about, Eddie? Just stop fucking talking, mate.
It sounds like you're a very violent person.
Oh, God. I was just thinking of like a way of being in a situation where you need another person to come and like help you out, and the fight was just like the first thing that came
to mind. I feel like the zombie is the clinic and it's starting to win a little bit, and then Conor McGregor shows up and punches the clinic zombie in the face, and then you're good to go. It made sense only because I know you. But
it's so good. But look, mate, when you're sinking, you've just got to reach for a life fucking what? I've got to stop taking pre-workout before a podcast, mate.
Bro, you shouldn't need pre-workout at 6 p.m. You've already worked out.
I know, mate. I've already worked out. I went to boxing this morning.
You're not going to sleep for a month.
I know. It's because I've got some editing to do now. And I don't know why.
Are you still recording?
Yeah.
Okay, let's stop.
Yeah, let's stop.